Let's get down to business. And joining us now, it's a pleasure to welcome Eddie Yoon. He is the author of Super Consumers, A Simple, Speedy, and Sustainable Path to Superior Growth. Super Consumers by Eddie Yoon. Eddie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
The book Super Consumers is really a very interesting idea. And I think most of us have seen this either in ourselves or in people we know. There are some people who just get into some particular brand or item. They always walk around with a specific type of soda can in their hand. Or they get into some sort of craft or hobby, and they just get a little bit fanatical about it. Even the cars we drive, somebody's a Chevy fan, somebody's a Ford fan. The real super consumer, you go into their garage and you see all the signs and memorabilia all around there, not just the car itself. Tell us how you came to identify these super consumers and what sets them apart from just fans.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So it's a concept that's not new in some sense. Some people call them heavy users, or even if you think about the 80-20 rule, right, the whole notion of 20% of your folks drive 80% of your business. And so it's not necessarily a brand new idea, but it's an idea with a twist, I think, that's made better for modern times today. And I think you hit upon the nuance that's the key one, is that it's not just that you buy a lot of stuff of a category, but that you care a lot about it, because certainly there are consumers who, you know, they may buy a lot of bread, and perhaps that you think that they're really into bread until you realize they have a house full of teenagers who are bottomless pits of eating, and that's why they do that, but they could care less about it, right? And that when you kind of marry that emotion with that extreme behavior, then that's what I found, is that they exist in every category. And I think, as the way that you opened, every one of us is something, a super consumer of something. And that's why I like the concept, because it's easy to relate to and understand. But that what I've proven out over kind of 20 years of growth strategy, plus some of the big data that I had access to as part of Nielsen, was that these folks exist in every category. There are about 10% of consumers that drive 30 to 70% of category sales. If you were to calculate category profit, there are even more of that, and they have kind of 99% of all the insights for that person that's carrying around the can of soda. Like, what in the world could you do to make that business better? Or the person that is a super consumer of cars, how would you actually entice somebody else to become a super consumer like them? Like, these are the people that have all the answers to some degree. And I feel like if businesses of all sizes would just spend a little more time understanding who they are, that they could actually grow faster and in a far easier and better way.
And really, these super consumers are, in a way, ambassadors for the brand. They'll go out and they'll tell everybody, and they'll try and win people over to their belief about that product.
Yes, that's incredibly important in this day and age where, you know, people are either skipping commercials for advertising, or, you know, it's just harder and harder for people to trust kind of big companies, as it were, or big brands, or, you know, somebody is telling me something, but is it true? And that there are some estimates that say that 20 to 50% of all your sales are driven by word of mouth. And so, to your point, not only is it more effective because it's more authentic, but a super consumer can actually be more accurate about why a category is good in terms of it changes their life in a meaningful way, even if it's not a huge category. And that message of it's authentic, it's from a legit person that you and I trust, but also it's a credible, logical way that they use something that I'd never thought of to use before that makes their lives better. That's what attracts other people to become like them.
We're heading into the holiday shopping season, Black Friday. I've been seeing the ads for weeks now. There are going to be big discounts on tons of items all over the place. All I have to do is wade through massive crowds, be jostled about, pick over whatever's left for me, and I'm able to get a really good deal. Is that something that's going to turn me into a super consumer?
You know, it's sadly not, actually. It could. I wouldn't say never say never. But what invariably Black Friday attracts are people who love deals, not necessarily who love the categories or the brands that they have. And the way that I know this to be true is that some estimates, the National Retail Foundation will say that about $70 billion of gifts that are bought at the holidays will be returned after the holidays, and that is a massive cost, and it's a massively inefficient thing, much less for the consumer who's, you know, I think we've all received gifts that, you know, they're not quite what we wanted, right? They're either subpar, we want to return it, or they've been regifted with it. It's even worse for e-commerce businesses, where some estimates, I think Kurt Salmon Associates is a firm that says that one-third of all e-commerce purchases are returned, and that's even more expensive because of shipping. And so part of what I've concluded is that the holiday season, Black Friday and the like, people think it's full of gold mines, and it can be in terms of driving your sales, but it's also full of landmines as well, too, is that you could be mistakenly thinking that you have won the lottery and you find out that you have a terrible disease because, you know, you've gotten all these returns back, and that it's a bit tricky because you're going against the grain. But I would say for companies to focus less on giving a great deal, but creating unique products that would actually attract somebody who's into the category and that they say, wow, you know, I was looking for a deal, but look at this one here. I've never seen this version of it before. I'm going to get it. Or even training people to be better gift givers, because, you know, I don't really blame, you know, retailers and manufacturers and brands for going crazy over Black Friday. But what we all need to collectively do is acknowledge the fact that we as people we're bad gift givers, and myself included, right? You're trying to get it done, or you're enticed by a good deal. You're like, wow, I can give this gift and check the box and do it cheaper without much thought to it is actually something that someone's going to want, right? And that if we actually collectively said we're going to get better at gift giving, the holiday season not only becomes more fun because you're actually going to get something that you want, but it becomes more profitable for everybody else too.
Good point. You mentioned something there, landmines, and I think that there are a lot of landmines that could be associated with Black Friday, but actually with almost any purchases that a consumer's involved in. And we're seeing more and more of this. It's almost as if the companies don't really care to protect their consumers. Here I'm specifically thinking about the recent problems with Equifax, but there are others as well that could be cited. Retailers who have allowed breaches to occur and put their consumers, they've put them at risk.
Yeah, it's a huge problem, and I actually think that Equifax is just the tip of the surface there, right? I mean, it's just the iceberg is much bigger because, you know, in general, you run into almost any company, and they'll say as part of their core values, like, you know, please our customers, or there's some sort of message about we care about our customers and whatnot. And what I actually find is that people tend to be pretty transactional with their customers, you know, and that, yes, you care about them, but to the point where I just want you to buy something, or I care about finding you so that I can tell you and shout at you. It's really kind of a one-sided transactional relationship, to your point, and that if you have that mindset of, like, you know what, there's millions of consumers out there. If I lose one, I'll get another two tomorrow, then that's how you're going to treat people, and you're not going to safeguard their data. Whereas I do think that there are people, some companies out there, where they think of their consumers as long-term relationships. They think of it from a lifetime value perspective, and they know that if I screw up with you, whether it's a bad product or a bad service, or I mess up your data, God forbid, then not only might I lose you as a customer, you're going to go tell five other people that I screwed this up too, and it's going to bite me completely when I don't at least expect it there. And so I think at the root cause, there's tactical things that we need to do to protect privacy so that the Equifax things don't happen again. But a lot of companies, I think, you know, can maybe use the holiday period to be a little more introspective and say, you know what, when push comes to shove, do I actually treat people, my customers, more transactionally or relationally? And that's why I think the super consumer thing actually is really helpful here, in that these people love the category. They love buying the category. They would love the category to be better. They would love the companies to be better. And they actually don't want it to be transactional. They don't want to just buy your thing and move away. They want a relationship with you. And that the more that companies can realize that these people not only have value for their business, but that it's actually something where you could have, you know, almost like you have a board of directors, you could have a board of super consumers who are kind of coaching and guiding you throughout, you know, any decision that you have to make. And then I think once people realize that it's this relationship that's a possibility, then perhaps they'll stop treating customers so transactionally, and vice versa, that customers won't treat brands transactionally as well too.
And part of that, I think, is to make the transaction itself pretty much seamless and extremely secure. And to that end, I think that the whole financial aspect of this, and particularly with all the breaches that we've seen, we really need to look at how those transactions are carried out, maybe even a new approach to banking in general.
You know, it's so funny you say that, because I wrote an article about how millennials hate banks.
Yeah.
And the truth of the matter is
they're not the only ones.
Like exactly. You're exactly right. Partly, it is kind of almost too hard to change, in that the DNA of most banking companies and most payment companies is, you know, to treat people transactionally. Some people do look at lifetime value, but it's not enough to protect the privacy. Or, you know, we live in a day and age where you just have to expect your identity is going to be stolen more oftentimes than not. And so there's actually a category called prepaid cards. Companies like Netspend do this, and Brinks are doing this, where you have like 80-90% of the checking account benefits that you have, but because it's not tied to a bank, you can't ruin your credit report. You can't, if you get a problem with a fraud one, it's really easy to just cancel it out and just start up a new one again. Like, the switching costs are not nearly as high as traditional banking accounts are. And that I suspect that if you look kind of in the future, like, this is a smallish category, about 15 or 16 million households have these cards now. I suspect that that'll double in, you know, short period of time, but also that people may, you know, come away and say, why would I ever need a bank? I have this thing that's a totally different financial instrument. And actually, to your point, like, if you look at Starbucks in their app that they have, consumers have billions of dollars of cash loaded onto that app.
Wow.
And it's basically a free...
Billions,
yes. And I think in 2013, in one of the quarters, $1.3 billion of cash was loaded onto these cards.
Incredible.
And Starbucks is making, you know, over $100 million of profit just managing the float on it, because, you know, they've not promised any interest or savings as a result of it, but it's a huge benefit to them. They're making money as a retailer and as a financial services company. But the reason why they're able to do this is because banks aren't giving anybody much of any incentive to keep their money there anyway, right? There's not much of a savings return that's interest that's paid there. And I think, to your point, the nature of technology is such that payments, as it were, can happen in a lot of different businesses in a lot of different ways, be it through Starbucks or this Brinks card, that aren't banks. And if the banks continue to treat people the way, you know, transactionally, kind of like we talked about, and not lean into their super consumers that are there, then they're going to be in a world of hurt in the next two decades.
Eddie Yoon, and the book is Super Consumers, something to really think about as we move into the holiday shopping season, both for consumers, watch what others are doing, but also for businesses. Super Consumers, a simple, speedy, and sustainable path to superior growth, by Eddie Yoon. Eddie, thank you so much, and thank you for joining us today.
Awesome. It was a pleasure.